Hello, and welcome to Lesson 27. I hope you have been enjoying this lecture series and the topics that we have covered. Thanks to the questions you asked, the fabric of the Hands Full program is being woven into a protocol that many of you will enjoy implementing, both for your children with special needs and for your children who are developing typically. So we're going to start today's lecture with a personal anecdote that happens to me repeatedly, and every time I see this phenomenon, I can't help but marvel over and over again. I frequently get calls and I'm asked to speak at various Shabbatonim, particularly getaway Shabbatonim, that people enjoy going to just for a change of scenery, some good ambiance, company, food, and some fuel for growth. These types of get-togethers give people an opportunity to recharge and grow at the same time. Of particular interest to me, however, are the Shabbases that occur during the summer. These Shabbases don't usually have a particular agenda in mind. These Shabbases represent merely an opportunity for people to get away from the hot, stuffy city or to get a break from having to prepare Shabbos. So when you walk into a hotel building that is hosting such a Shabbos, you find a colorful potpourri of Klal Yisrael, every size, shape, and color yid you could possibly find. They all arrive to the hotel with one common goal, to get a break. There really isn't much of an agenda planned in these summer getaways, maybe one or two men's lectures and one woman's lecture. Light, easy, just a break. So I walk into the hotel on a Friday afternoon and I analyze the crowd. And there's really nothing to analyze because everyone is different. We're talking about somewhere upwards between 1,800 to 2,000 people coming from all different walks of life. Terrific. No particular agenda, very relaxed, everyone settling in, and then something very interesting happens. As the clock moves closer to Shabbos, without any particular direction from anyone in particular, all the women somehow land up at a specific table and get ready to light candles. They somehow all seem to know what to do. No one is telling them. And the men somehow manage to get themselves into a common room, set up as a base medrash, and somehow all seem to find the same page in the same sitter and can follow the same tefillas. And then when it's time to eat the evening suda, somehow everyone in the hotel knows exactly what the menu will be. And when someone in the middle of the meal breaks out into song, somehow the whole room full of people all seem to know the song. And so the weekend continues. The next morning, when to daven, when to eat, when they will be eating, what to sing, when to nap, until Shabbos is over, nobody seems to have any questions. No one is confused. Everyone knows what to wear and when to be where. So what is that phenomenon? Could you take 2,000 Americans and put them in a building for a weekend and not tell them what's happening, how and when? What would that look like? How about British people? Spanish people, French, any country? No, you couldn't. But you can take thousands of Yidden who are Shomer Shabbos and put them anywhere on a Shabbos and it will just run. This phenomenon has a name. It's called Mesaira. Transmission of our lifestyle from one generation to another since the Torah was given to us in the year 2448. That's over 3,300 years ago. And if you assume that each generation is approximately 20 to 25 years, that's the amount of time that it takes each child to grow up and become an adult in his or her own right, then if you do the math, the transmission occurred approximately 135 times. So 135 times somebody, or a group of somebodies, gave over our entire lifestyle, what we wear, what we eat, what we don't eat, how we cook what we eat, how we keep Shabbos, how we behave in general, with such remarkable accuracy, so much so, that when you get 2,000 of us from various different backgrounds together, for the most part, we do the same thing. So who are those somebodies that accomplish this? Who are those somebodies that do such a terrific and accurate job? I'll tell you who they are. They are us. The women, we are the ones who have been mechanech our children and transmitting Torah values for 135 generations strong. We are the ones who give over the Shema Yisrael to every single Yiddish child So much so that Rav Eliezer Silver, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was able to run around Goyisha monasteries after the war and identify Jewish children just by calling out Shema Yisrael and seeing which child responded to those words. So this entire phenomenon of walking into a hotel and spending Shabbos with no one in particular, yet they all do the same thing you do, is because of us, is because of the women. Or, if you walk into the tzion of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and you watch women and men of every color of the rainbow davening for absolutely the same thing, the same way, with the same shuckling, the same tehillim, the same facial expressions, and the same tears, is because of the women. And I'm sure you can think of many other such examples. This is the power of transmission. This is the power of Messiah. This is the power of the Yiddish Mama. So now I'm going to move on to another story, connected to this story, but the other side of the coin. And this story happened a few summers ago, around my regular Shabbos table. One of my couples came for Shabbos, and we were relaxing at the end of a Shabbos meal. One of my Einiklach, approximately 9 years old at the time, was telling over about an activity that they had in day camp. He said, Bubby, or maybe he said Zaidi, I don't remember, a magician came to day camp for an activity this week. Oh, I responded, that's nice. And you know what the magician did, continued my Einikl? He told us that he could hypnotize us to become the children that our mothers want us to be. Hypnotize you, I said. How would he do that? So my Einikl went into a whole detailed description about how everybody got a paper and a pen, and they had to write down the 5 things that their mother wants them to be. And then if they got called on, they got, quote unquote, hypnotized to be that thing that would make their mother so, so happy. So I asked my grandson, what did the boys write on their pieces of paper? What do their parents want them to be? And this is the part where the story gets a little painful. This is what he said. He said, people wrote, my mother wants me to clean up my room. My mother wants me to make the bus in the morning. My mother wants me not to fight with my sisters and brothers. My mother wants me to eat supper and take showers. Ouch. I was horrified. Is this the Messiah our children are getting? As I sat around the table, I said to my couple that was sitting there, isn't that sad? They definitely agreed. What happened to being Ehrlich? What happened to learning Torah? What happened to being a mensch? What messages exactly are our children, the apples of our eyes, who are going to march into the next generation and greet Mashiach, what message are they getting? Now, I know that all of you definitely do teach about Menschlichkeit, and you do teach about Ehrlichkeit, and you do teach all the many other important values that we Yidden represent. The proof of that is in this hotel, and the results of 135 generations. But you still have to ask yourself, if my child was given a paper and a pen and asked to list the things that his mother, or father for that matter, want most of him, what would he or she write? Just something to think about. Now think about it this way. Is my child listing the items that I want the most because those items make my life more comfortable? Am I injecting my comfort into the values that my child writes down on the paper? Am I focused on my peace of mind, inherent in supper being finished on time, showers being done on time, clean rooms, children who don't fight, and being able to breathe that sigh of relief, which, by the way, our children sense, when that yellow school bus rolls away? Think about this. Make sure you're taking yourself out of the picture and focusing on the ultimate goals of frustration tolerance, obedience, impulse control, shmiras ha-mitzvahs, emotional health and communication skills, all of which we mentioned throughout this lecture series. Just a thought for today. Now, I'm also going to answer 2 short questions. The first question is about a 2-year-old who was a sunny, happy, delicious baby, and when he turned 2, became kvetchy, needy, and whatever our mother does for him doesn't seem to be enough. Our caller also added that this is a child who is developing normally. So the answer to this question is that as long as the pediatrician is comfortable with this child's health, and I'm adding this caveat into the mix because people tend to overuse urgent care facilities and skip regular important scheduled pediatrician appointments, then this mother is describing a normal turn of events that is actually supposed to occur when the sunny infant becomes a toddler. That's when it starts to rain, so to speak, and you might just need your umbrella. It is during this time that toddlers learn to express their opinions, which might be very noisy at first, and filled with kvetching and crying. It is perfectly fine for you to read one story and deal with a tantrum afterwards if you don't have the time and are not able to read a second story. Remember, the younger children are when they learn that they are not the center of the universe and that they cannot and should not control you, the healthier they will be as they emerge into regular childhood. I also remember being concerned when some of my toddlers seemed unhappy all the time. It is taka very difficult to watch. But remember, as long as your pediatrician is not finding anything out of the ordinary, keep that smile on your face, give that child as much love as you are able, not everything he demands, and know that this stage will pass. The second question actually came from a preschool teacher who was wondering how to manage situations that must happen, that children must do, and are not doing after missions were stated. She was wondering if the hand-over-hand method could work. First of all, it's important to know that the past 26 lectures, and this one, have only been focused on parents, not teachers. Although the hands-full method, when applied properly, does work in the classroom as well, there needs to be some tweaking, because for the most part, teachers are dealing with a much higher teacher-to-student ratio. That's why, especially in preschools, it is so important for there to be well-trained assistant teachers in the classroom who can assist a teacher when more manpower is needed. Secondly, every school has an administration who supervises teachers and dictates methodology. Because I am not the one to do that, I'm going to refrain from answering this question directly. Clearly, one would never do HOH, hand over hand, on a student without the haskama of her immediate supervisor or principal. So that's it for the questions right now. Wishing you all a wonderful week.